Author Ron Rash has long been known for his lyrical tales of his native Appalachia, most notably in his best-selling novel, Serena. We also spoke with him about his award-winning collection, Burning Bright, short stories that painted an often grim picture of modern-day Appalachia, beset by poverty, crystal meth addiction, and crime. In his newest book, The Cove, Ron Rash goes back in time to a North Carolina in the waning days of World War I. A wounded veteran, Hank, and his sister, Laurel, are trying to revive the family farm in The Cove, a cabin hard by cliffs that cut off light and outsiders. As Laurel's mom tells her, a gloomy place.
Nothing but shadow land, her mother told Laurel. Claimed there wasn't a gloomier place in the whole Blue Ridge. A cursed place as well, most people in the county believed. Cursed long before Laurel's father bought the land. The Cherokee had stayed away from the cove, and the first white family to settle here had all died of smallpox. There were stories of hunters who'd come into the cove and never been seen again, a place where ghosts and fetches wandered.
Ron Rash, reading from his novel, The Cove. Both The Cove and Laurel seem cursed. She seems like the slowly disappearing North Carolina parakeet. Her neighbors think she's a witch, but when Laurel finds a mute stranger on their property, there seems to be the possibility of happiness. Author Ron Rash joins us from WUNC in Durham, North Carolina. Ron, good to talk to you again.
Good to be back on again.
What a great read. And I want to ask you first about the language. We just heard some of it. Fetches. We heard of fetches. And in reading, we hear about ash grates and poppet dolls. And here's one sentence. He's not got the sand to do that. How much fun was it for you to go back into this language?
I love doing that. And I was fortunate in some ways that I grew up hearing a lot of that language from my older relatives. But I also love to do research on particularly regional dialects, not just Appalachia, but it was a delight to go back and to find the poetry in the, you know, the folk language.
And before you flash us back to this sort of World War I era story, you begin with a 1950s era TVA, Tennessee Valley Authority official, telling people that we realize in this same area that they have to leave, that this area is going to be flooded. What were you trying to say with that? You know, this story's disappearing. The people are disappearing.
Yes, I feel sometimes that works on the level of a complete culture disappearing. Because actually in my first novel, One Foot in Eden, I had a flooding. I mean, it dealt more directly with the flooding, but just that erasure of a culture and a time and place.
Yeah. Well, tell us about that time and place. Laurel and her brother. They meet Walter. It's revealed to the reader, if not to Laurel and Hank, that Walter was on a ship, the Vaterland, am I saying that
correctly?
Yeah. Which docked in New York during this time, just before World War I. And you have a note in the acknowledgments that says that you researched that ship. So were Germans really on board this ship and then Germans like Walter really arrested and interned in a camp in Hot Springs when the war started?
Incredibly, yes. And as I started doing more research on it, I thought, if I can't make an interesting novel out of this, I'd better give up. Because it was, in many ways, if I had written it as fiction, no one would believe it. But, the Vaterland was actually in New York Harbor for 3 years. And the German crew, this was before the United States declared war, or joined the war, you know, declared war against Germany. And these men were free to go. They would attend operas. They would do German fundraisers.
Well, and yet when the war breaks out, the men were arrested, detained in Hot Springs of all places. Walter breaks out, makes his way to the cove, and doesn't speak because, of course, then it would be revealed that he's German. And so begins our story with Laurel. Tell us more about Laurel. She does seem, well, she is literally blighted. She has a birthmark. And she feels a little bit like these birds that are also characters. Tell us more about that.
I agree. Like the Carolina parakeet, a bird that was actually, a lot of people don't realize that in the Appalachian Mountains, there was this beautiful parakeet called the Carolina parakeet, and they were just dying out at that time. And Laurel is a character who, one thing I wanted to try to do in this novel was to go with the idea of landscape as destiny. I've always been fascinated with the idea of how the landscape that one grows up in affects his or her psychology, the perception of the world. And for Laurel, being in this dark cove, it seems to me that this, the impact of that is that she's struggling so hard to find some light.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's something, too, that's universal but also maybe particular to Appalachia, this idea of people living in such poverty, such darkness, that there's almost a mystical about them, but not in a good way, you know, in a way that makes people almost afraid of them.
Well, particularly in this novel, I believe that's the case. At the same time, though, I hope the reader senses that, as Emily Dickinson once said, tell the truth but tell it slant, that the superstition, the fear, all of that ties into the idea of, as we see with Chauncey Fife, the idea of the, you know, anti-German hysteria at that time. And also, I hope the reader senses a connection to what's happening in the United States today.
Well, yeah, there's a fear of the other. Chauncey Fife is a full of himself army recruiter, just a few degrees of consciousness from realizing what a fraud he is. You know, he's avoided the battlefield, but he's the self-assigned policeman who's going to decide who is patriotic and who's not, from college professors to librarians.
I wanted Chauncey to be a character that the reader at first might see as merely a buffoon. To me, one of the most frightening aspects of history is how these people, Idi Amin, Goebbels, people that at first are not taken very seriously or seen almost in a comic way, can, once given the opportunity, cause great harm. And Chauncey, to me, embodies that kind of character that we've seen in the world and continue to see.
Well, we mentioned the Tennessee Valley Authority worker 40 years later. He pulls up a bucket from a well. Now, we now know that's the well in the cove. In that bucket is a skull. So we know right at the beginning of the book, not everyone's making it through this. We're not going to give anything away. But not everyone makes it through this. What's it like to kill off a character?
Oh, it's very painful. I've had people come up to me and say, why did you do this to this particular character? And my answer is, I didn't want to. I feel bad about it, too. But, the story dictates it. And particularly this story, I think the reader senses pretty early on that all is not going to be well by the time we get to the end.
And just, the cove itself. We began by saying that you like this idea of cultures being flooded, metaphorically, landscape as destiny. Are you talking, too, about losing places like the cove, in these dark, gloomy, mysterious places, as well as the people that live there?
In some ways, and I also wanted this book to feel like a dark fairy tale, and I hope the reader, feels that as well. But one thing I do hope to do in my work, and I think this is one aspect that art does very well, is to preserve a culture that is disappearing. And certainly one thing I hope to do in the book was to give a sense of the language, the folkways, and the culture of my part of the world, which is Western North Carolina.
Author Ron Rash, his novel of World War I Appalachia in North Carolina is The Cove. Ron Rash, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.